Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Good afternoon, everyone. Happy Wednesday to you, and welcome to the HITECH annual report work meeting. We have our small but mighty team of Carolyn Peterson and Aaron Mary, our co-chairs, and Christina Carballo and Brett Albert. And with that, I'm going to turn over to our co-chairs to get us started for the day.
Hey, everyone. Good afternoon, and thanks again for making some time in your busy day to come to our work group and make some more progress on the next version of the annual report. I hope everyone is feeling healthy and safe as we work through the summer heat, and I look forward to our work today.
Yeah, and hello to everybody listening. I appreciate you joining the call. I echo what Carolyn said in terms of everybody's being safe and taking care of themselves and their loved ones, their family and friends. It is definitely a trying time, but, you know, together we'll get there. And these topics and these concepts, I keep saying at every report work group that we talk about, but, you know, they are so germane and playing out right now in the public discourse in terms of interoperability and other challenges. So these reports to Congress become even more important. And I have leveraged multiple iterations of these reports, even in discussions with the CDC and others in our local health system and local public health authorities. So look forward to talking, and let's get this show started. Kelly, you want to kick it off?
Sure. So where we left off was midway through a Word doc that had some potential topics for the annual report that we're working on. And we thought we would go back to that document and see if we can hopefully, perhaps, wrap that up today. We will have a public comment period as well, and then briefly discuss our next steps for the next meeting, which will be in early August. Here, not nearly as far away as the last one was. So if we could have the next slide, please. Since our meeting schedule, today we're at July 22, and then our next meeting is in just a couple of weeks, where we start thinking about the crosswalk for the topics. That may carry us into September, and then, of course, we'll have outline and the drafts and all the stuff that we're all really familiar with at this point. Next slide, please. So we will present in September at the HITECH meeting, which will be virtual, and what we present kind of will depend on how far we get today and at the August meeting, but so far we're on schedule, so good for us. Next slide, please. And so now we'll get into the discussion of potential topics. Go ahead. And let's see, I can't read that, but I can pull up. There we go. Well, I'll pull up my own copy on my computer, as perhaps you will choose to do also.
Yeah, Michelle, if you're able to zoom in.
Yeah, I don't have access myself. Somebody Excel might have access.
And if it turns out to be a problem, Aaron and I can just read them out loud and we can work through it that way. I don't want anybody to go blind before you get in some summer swimming and stuff.
Is there a wider landscape view of this document? It's a landscape document.
Well, yeah, there we go. Whoops. Almost. Yay. There we go. That's pretty good because the far right column is empty for everything going forward. So where we left off at our last meeting was on these two items in the top section related to the health IT response to the COVID-19 pandemic. And the first issue is the patient matching challenges due to gaps in information, particularly demographics, shared from commercial laboratories and from contact tracing records, and the lack of unique patient identifiers. We see this as landing in the public health and interoperability target areas. It's something new. We didn't have that in the 2019 report. And Aaron was a person who suggested this, so I'm going to give him the mic and he can talk about what he had in mind.
Yeah, so let's talk about real-world issues here. So, and I'm sure also Brett has a number of them as being a practitioner on the front lines. So to the degree of it, we've had numerous challenges as we're doing contact tracing here across Austin and on behalf of Austin Public Health, and really making sure that as we are developing clusters or noticing clusters develop of COVID-19 patients or whatever it be, making sure that errant, say there's a contact or a suspected person that's called Aaron, right? How is one Aaron not the other Aaron, or is not a duplicate in the record, or there's so forth and so on, right? So this issue sort of compounds itself. And given the fact that, I'm in Texas and there's a number of demographic statuses that people have similar sounding names or same names, it becomes very complicated, right, without a unique patient identifier. And I think we've seen these gaps of care that are obviously playing out in the public health domain, but are not exclusive to public health. I think this is across the entire continuum of care. I'd invite Brett to give his physician perspective on this as well. I'm sure he has seen this firsthand about how there can be major ramifications from this.
Yeah, absolutely. I would just echo what you said, Aaron. It's a challenge. We have processes when the data is found to be in the wrong chart, but I just wonder how long it goes undetected, if it's close to or not, not exactly the same. So yeah, it's interesting. I think it's gaining some momentum. We've just recently had some of our HIM folks sort of reaching out to our senior leadership talking about, will you sort of politically back, a UDI, and not necessarily how it's done, but just back the concept. And it's still, it needs to be brought out more. I think it's still at an executive level, not the provider level or the HIT level. Leader, I think that it's pretty clear, but at just executive leadership of hospitals and clinics and things, it's still one of those things that I don't think there's as much awareness as there should be, and the complexities, and especially as we go down, all this extra information exchange that's going to be forced, for good reason, but it's going to be forced without that, I think we run into some unintended consequences.
Right. I get another real-world aspect, issue is right now labs, right? I think there's been a lot of news media about timeliness of COVID-19 lab testing and whatnot. And there's a big issue, there's a big gap. If you go to, say, a commercial lab, a drive-through lab, you go to a common drugstore convenience that happens to be providing COVID-19 testing, that data is not shared as rapidly or as readily as, say, you go to a provider institution and get that data there back with the public health authorities. So there is common times where people are getting tested multiple times. They shouldn't be, or they're not getting tested. They fall through the cracks. It's difficult because you don't really know that this patient Aaron is really Aaron, right? And so this compounds the lab testing issue and the density and saturation rate that we have right now in this country. And it's causing a big hangup simply because we don't have some strategy or some way of correctly identifying uniquely that Aaron is Aaron. I'd invite Carolyn or Christina to give your comments as well.
I think that as important as it is to tease out all of these aspects of the situation, which is real, we can't lose sight of some of the privacy considerations that have kind of kept the UID from going further in the future. It's not for nothing that we haven't gotten it yet, and it would be useful to focus on how we can resolve some of those concerns so that it might be something meaningful and implementable going forward.
Good point.
Yeah, I would just add another caveat to it. I'm sorry, Christine, I won't mean to take any time from you, but to your point about the labs, so what ends up happening when you don't have that matching challenge, you just end up sending the results to the patient, which is fine. I mean, they need the results, but then it doesn't go anywhere in terms of making decisions about going to work or being quarantined, et cetera. That's been a real challenge, especially as you've had to rapidly stand up multiple labs to help, the volumes that are necessary. You're not going to have an interface and have all these, patient matching issues. You just end up sending the results to the patient and expect them then to triage their own result.
Yep. Christine, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is a great topic. I'm wondering two things. I wonder if we should pull out the unique patient identifier as a standalone topic in the report. I feel like it's come up multiple times during our high-tech discussions. It's kind of been one of those topics that's been off limits, but we always bring it up. So I think starting to draw more attention to this and, again, having its own section might be worthwhile. I can't recall if it already has its own section, but Carolyn, Aaron, you know?
That's an interesting thought. I will say I participated in a virtual update for Capitol Hill about 2 weeks ago with a congressman from Illinois. I forget his name, but brilliant guy that has a PhD. And he actually very articulately spoke to where the House is looking at this and their position on it and the need, especially around COVID. And so I think to your point, Christina, about the people being aware of the issue and it being talked about with our various lawmakers, it may merit it if it's not already its own standalone thing. What do you think, Carolyn? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not as dialed into all the legislation coming up as you are, but I do think that it's something that will be revisited again and again as we deal with the various aspects of the coronavirus and any other pandemics or epidemics that follow on or launch themselves in the middle of all this.
Michelle, do you know if this is its own thing, or could we pull it out to kind of focus on UDI or some strategy around patient matching, if you want to call it that?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first part of your question. Can you repeat
I think, going to Christina's inquiry, is this its own, is UDI or patient identifier, is that a specific, like, category or topic we could call attention to it? Like, how could we do that?
Right, and this is where, with having public health as a new target area, things tend to be overlapping a little bit. At the moment, patient matching and UDI are topics within the landscape, I think both in interoperability, but not necessarily in gaps or, you know, opportunities yet. So you could pull them completely up into public health, or you could mention them in a couple places throughout the document wherever it's appropriate for the target area.
Yeah, and you know what? We probably will get to some of that when we do our sessions on the crosswalk. So I might have jumped ahead a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
so then, go ahead.
So, no, the other thing I wanted to just note is that when we were evaluating the patient demographics for USCDI, a big guiding principle that we had was how can the demographics data be used for patient matching?
That's a good point. So there's also ties in the USCDI and then ties into other strategies, right? So that's a great point. I like that. So let me ask this question then. Should we leave this like this, or should we pull this completely out and make it all about under the public health category? Because I think it's beyond just public health. It's also general care, right? I mean, not having a UDI affects everything, essentially.
I'd have to think about that as we build the report, because I mean, I think I have to refresh my memory on our structure, but I think we'll figure out how it kind of goes in again when we do the crosswalk section. One thing on this section that I want to point out is that we have health IT response to COVID-19, which is immediate, but we should think about broadening that to just, it's kind of, COVID-19 got our attention, and it's been a catalyst that's made us identify major areas where health IT can help. But really what we're looking at is not only responding to COVID-19, but creating an infrastructure that is going to enable us to respond better to future pandemics as well and other emergencies.
Yeah, it's just general pandemic response. I think you're right. You're exactly right. When these topics, when we put them down, COVID had just happened, and all of us were frenetically coming up with example after example of things that were essentially gaps. So you're right. This isn't just COVID-19. It's everything. You're right. Okay. So I guess for now, then, what I'm hearing is leave this structured document where it is, and then we'll reevaluate as we look at the crosswalk and see if we need to elevate the topic, or we can even propose that to the high tech, the big high tech, just to ask them their opinion. But I'm hearing Carolyn leave this kind of in, and Christina, leave this kind of in this current format, and we'll come back and revisit the formatting later.
I'm good with that. I mean, we may see some developments in the next 2 months or 3 months that help us figure out where to place it and how to manage it in ways that are acceptable to multiple parties and useful in terms of actually advancing the field.
Christina, are you good with that?
I think that sounds great.
Okay. Brett, you're good with that?
Yes, sir.
Cool. All right. Next topic here. I'll take it since it's mine. The clinical workforce and patient education re-education on the use of technology for telehealth, including smartphones. Yes, so I remember this one distinctly. In terms of, and this plays to everything. It's amazing, particularly here in Austin. Something I guess I realized I didn't actually like truly understand and appreciate until this whole initiative, which is just about everybody has smartphones. But not everybody is on the Apple Store or the Google Play Store, and certainly the lower socioeconomically challenged indigent care, they tend not to have those accounts and that access to things, much less being able to read in a native language. So I call that sort of the health equity of applications and software and technology and sort of education on how to, right? So that way they can participate in their own care and help us overcome any gaps of care. So to the point of it, this was all about, you know, ensuring people understand how tech can help you and overcoming either preconceived biases or fear or other, which inhibit the adoption of health IT technologies. What's your all take to that? I'm curious what you've seen, what you feel. Is this germane? Is this something that's a priority, or is this, you know, where is this on the category of things?
I'll take a stab, Aaron. Would you also include things like just the awareness of my internet connection can support a video visit, for instance? You know,
that's
that
a great
level
point.
Of
bandwidth. Yeah, bandwidth considerations, yes.
Because we certainly have quite a rural population that has internet access, and so you think, okay, well, we'll do a video visit, and then when you actually get down to it, they don't have enough bandwidth to stream. You know, just so we've actually, as an organization, had to stand up a separate help desk with a third-party vendor just to do that patient education. Do you know what a pop-up blocker is? You know, just, again, to enable those technology pieces. I think it's a good topic to talk about and to see if there's a role of the federal government. There's obviously a role in terms of internet as a utility, that piece, but also providing some resources to say, you know, can you do that? Here's some maps. Here's some how-to guides. That's just my take.
Mm-hmm. Christina, Carolyn?
I agree with everything that's been said. I mean, I think we could talk about this one for a long time, but I do think that it's important. I think that we've seen a lot more interest in telehealth, which is wonderful. One thing on the patient access, the thing we might want to note, and I hear that there's two sides of this. There's the providers implementing solutions and then educating patients on the availability as well. This could be an area that we just tag as part of the potential re-engagement or with the patient engagement playbook that we discussed in one of our earlier work group meetings that came out of ONC. I think it was out of the former policy committee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they put that website together on how to. I remember that. It was a really great infographic website. I remember that.
Hey, Aaron, what about from the perspective of the provider? I still see some sort of traditional myths being perpetuated. We met with the leader of our oncology service line, and we were talking about, or I asked him about some digital solutions, and he's like, you know, our patients are older and they don't want to use that stuff. And, you know, throwing out some actual facts, particularly this huge worldwide pilot that we just went into and which found, at least for us, we had folks into their 90s utilizing video visits and doing just fine. And I don't know if that's part of what you were thinking, sort of educating the clinical workforce on where that demand actually is, and that the elderly are just as likely to use it and actually engage in our system, engage more often once they've learned how to do it.
I think you're spot on, Brad. Same here in Austin. We're seeing that we have not had a drop-off in demographic or age that are willing to engage in telehealth. And in fact, we managed to keep basically the same volume level across our service lines, irrespective of age. I would say that what's changed, though, in the past couple of months is I give a lot of credit to CMS putting some actual real-world data out there. I saw some article about, I think that SEMA put out there, that like 9 million people engaged in, or no, something much more than that, engaged in telehealth in like a 30-day period or something. It was some study that was done by CMS on CMS claims data, and it was fantastic, right? They actually laid out, to your point, Brett, facts, right? These are the facts of what people did and how they did it and the quality of care. And so I think we can tap into some of those CMS data facts that they're you know, willingly telling people and teaching people about, and see how we can amplify that, to your point, to overcome those preconceived biases about technology.
Another thing to add to this is remote patient monitoring.
Mm-hmm. What about specifically?
Well, I mean, there's telehealth, and then there's remote patient monitoring, which I think can go hand in hand, but can also be separate. So I just think that adding, specifically calling out the remote patient monitoring piece would be a good idea.
I would agree.
Go ahead.
Would you tie remote patient monitoring to continuous patient monitoring as well, or just to episodic care?
I think it can be both. I know there's a lot of work going on in kind of some of the like groups like the Personal Connected Health Alliance and IHE on just standards-based approaches for remote monitoring. And I think there's been a lot of work that's been done that could be highlighted as we kind of think about some of the pandemic response. But I thought it would just be helpful to also include the remote monitoring. And when I think about it, I'm thinking about just like devices and patient-generated health data and kind of that whole suite.
Mm-hmm. You're right. You're exactly right. As a real-world story, you know, we did a lot of remote patient monitoring for COVID positive and suspected people, and it tied into patients that tied really well into our contact tracing efforts. You'd be amazed at how many of the, especially the indigent care, did not have a thermometer or a Bluetooth thermometer. And so credit to UT Austin, we just ended up buying some and donating to the patients and saying, look, you need this. We need you to track your temperature. You're suspected. You're a PUI. And so please stay home and just, you know, input your vitals and your temperature every duration, or it automatically will do it via Bluetooth. And those aren't cheap, right? Those cost $20, $30, $40 a pop for a Bluetooth thermometer. But, you know, it's these concepts of buy-in, right? You do that, but if you have someone that you can keep them out of the general public, you may have saved 10 other people from getting infected, right? So it's a worthwhile investment. But those concepts should be teased out. So I think you're right on, Christina.
Yeah, and then even beyond COVID, I think the education piece for the patient side is that this is a continuation of your treatment. We're allowing you to go home now, let's say it's CHF, maybe earlier than we normally would because of this continuous or intermittent monitoring. And it's not, we've done some pilots before, and if it's not good education on the front end, it's like, oh, yeah, you're supposed to wear this thing, and we'll be calling you or keeping an eye, you know, versus your doctor has ordered this. This is part of your treatment plan. You know, that falls into that education piece beyond just the COVID stuff.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Okay. So then I'm hearing and leave this where it is, add remote patient monitoring, continuous patient monitoring to this category, and just sort of enumerate on the bullet points and use some of the CMS data. Is that what I'm hearing? Are there takeaways?
Yep.
Okay.
Makes sense.
Alrighty. So are we now to the next section here under the yellow part?
No.
Okay. So these are topics that were carried over from last year, right? These are topics, and Michelle, keep me honest here. These are items that we, at the time we published a report to Congress last year, these weren't finalized, right? Like this one, the final rule wasn't launched until was in February. So our report already had gone out or was about to go out. Is that where we are right now?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, this section is all topics that were in last year's report that may have updates for this year.
Got it.
Sometimes they were final or not final, but the deciding factor was that they were from last year, and we want to decide if they should be carried over to this year in some depth.
All right, so without expanding upon these ad nauseum, since we do talk about these extensively within the HITECH itself, are there components of this that we haven't already addressed or things here beyond the fact that should we carry this forward and talk about it in this year's report? I vote yes, but I'd like to hear what you guys think about. Should we talk about this again in this year's report?
I think we can't not mention it. Perhaps we can reference some general feedback from the public or general response from the health IT community. And when I say general, I mean pretty general.
Yeah, Brett, Christina, what do you guys think?
Yeah, I think we have to comment.
Yep. Okay. Christina, any objections to that?
Nope, sounds good to me.
Okay. And then I think the same thing with TEFCA, right? Although TEFCA, I feel like hasn't really been spoken about as much as the general final rule for 21st century cures. I mean, we're kind of like just spinning all that up now, but I think we have to talk about it anyway this year because, I mean, so much great work is going on right now around that and standards development and whatnot. Am I wrong on that?
No, I mean, Sequoia has been doing a lot more public engagement and reaching out to different stakeholder groups and trying to get the word out and see about patient engagement. I mean, last year for a good while, there just wasn't that much to say about it because there wasn't much that was happening kind of in the front room. Everything was underground or in the back. But we are getting to the place, I think, where there'll be plenty to talk about by the fall.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that.
All right. And then the last one on here of the federal activities items was the CMS interoperability rule, which I think, I mean, it's the same thing. Like, we just need to talk about it. But, again, these are one of those that I haven't heard too much about it. Not like the CMS has not been busy or something with a pandemic to response, but I haven't heard too much more about it recently. But we know it's there. Any objections? Just carry it forward and keep talking about it?
Nope. I think we need to.
No objections.
Agree.
Okay.
Well, I would not be surprised if sometime in late September or early October we suddenly find a large wave of topics that where things have been happening and it's all been kind of unnoticed because of COVID. So the more of that we have on our sites now, the better off I think we'll be.
Excellent.
I totally agree. Totally agree.
If for no other reason than we're all getting really sick of hearing about COVID and it's good to look at other stuff.
Man.
Here. All right. Exchange of SDOH. Challenges operations, the capture and use of social determinants of health. Business models across healthcare sectors do not yet support the capture of the data, and that's very true. This is one that we continue to talk about, although I've said publicly on the record numerous times, it does drive me a little batty, people's definition of SDOH. So can we be more specific? Like, are we talking about patient-reported outcomes or whatever else? But, yeah, doesn't support the capture of the use of data due to lack of standards and data availability, patient matching, levels of technical maturity. Yeah, basically, you know, the document is free text. Yes, all that stuff. This one continues to carry forward. I think it's going to continue to carry forward. And I think from my perspective at least, you know, we've had a doozy of time just pulling out as we do national COVID-19 data trials, looking at the clinical notes. Because one physician will type COVID-19, another one will type COVID-19, one just puts COVID. So it becomes a it becomes a bit of a nightmare. But then again, is that SDLH, right? What is it? Should we talk about the patient-reported outcomes around COVID-19 or whatever? So I think there's, you know, when you look at SDLH in general, there's a lot of opportunities. Christina, I'm curious your part here. On US CDI standards, is SDLH called out, or is that still something that's floating out there sort of nebulous?
So for US CDI, our task force did not recommend that it is in it, but we highlighted it as a use case that should be submitted to US CDI once it's open. I will tell you I'm actively involved with the work in HL7's Gravity project, and just pointing to the standards piece of this assessment, they are working on the standards part. So not to go into the whole details of Gravity, but they've now submitted ICD-10 codes in May for food insecurity, and they're working on housing and transportation, and my understanding is that they're hoping to accelerate into more domains. So I think this is really relevant, and I think we'll have a lot of updates based on the work coming out of HL7 right now.
That is outstanding. I did not know they did that. What, do you have any idea when those ICD-10 codes will be available for food scarcity?
I can throw the link.
Yeah, would you? Because let me give you an example. As we're doing contact tracing, we are coming across so many people that don't have access to care, access to food, or in food deserts, whatever else. And so we link them up with city resources or Meals on Wheels or whatever it be to help them, you know, beyond COVID, right? You have the person on the phone, so help them as much as you can. And being able to track that with an ICD-10 code would be priceless, because they can do geo-mapping and really understand where those, in precise manner, where those food deserts or whatnot are, and link the right resources to them. That's great. Thank you for that. All right, so I'm hearing then leave us on here. So I'm sorry, I see that. So leave us on here then. All right. Carolyn, you want to take the PGHD one? This one was one of your passions.
Yes. So while the adoption of PGHD has increased in recent years, patients still face a variety of challenges to sharing their PhD with their providers, PGHD. Many providers lack the technical infrastructure, functional workflows, workforce capacity, and training to receive and use the data. So last year we put this in the patient access to information category. I mean, obviously we are all aware of the privacy and security issues around data created by patients and transmitted to medical entities. I would add that I think this year with different efforts to do contact tracing and to get people's COVID test results to them and to get people to take their temperatures and perhaps do other personal metrics to kind of see where they are and monitor themselves, this is going to be at least as important as it was in the past and possibly more. So I would keep it, but open to what you all think.
I agree.
I would agree as well.
Yeah. But
yeah, no, I don't. It's going to be a growing issue for sure.
Okay.
All right.
So I think that one stays in. And then we come to the Internet of Things, and this gets at the limited interoperability across the vendors. And as IoT objects become more integrated with health IT, you get more security risks. The FTC has been kind of the defender of privacy and security concerns related to the IoT, but there hasn't been a lot of strict regulation about that just yet. This fits into the emerging issues, interoperability, and privacy and security focus areas. Last year, we thought that it was emerging in a way where we didn't want to deal with it, but maybe it's emerged enough that we can.
Yeah, I think we have to. I mean, there's so many apps and things out there now. I mean, it's just everywhere, right? It's just there's no way we can't talk about this, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, but, you know, you're preaching to the choir here, so.
Christina Butt, any objections leaving on here?
Absolutely not.
Oh, sorry. No, sorry. You guys couldn't see me smiling. Yep, looks good. Sorry, cool. Michelle, we're not taking anything off.
No, we're not. Kind of like
in the process point, I'll add that that's okay, but we may want to think about streamlining how we talk about certain things. Like, they might not have two paragraphs each in the landscape. They might just get a paragraph this year and note that they're continuing and here's what's new, but not necessarily go into as much depth. So that's a way to handle, you know, things that are lasting over time.
I think that's fair.
That makes sense.
I mean, IoT could be its own dissertation, for gosh sake. So I think at least just mentioning it, that we're aware of it and it's something we're tracking, I think is important. And I've seen some recent NIST publications that have been trying to address this from security and privacy component perspective. I think there was even a draft NIST recently that started trying to set some standards for this stuff. So I know people are working on it. Okay. Other potential topics. Is that where we are now? All right.
Yep.
Again, back to the health IT response for COVID-19. Public health authorities face interoperability challenges to be able to collect information. Again, this is another dissertation. from clinical providers and laboratories needed for proper reporting. I don't see how we could not have this on here. What do you all think?
I agree, and I think that the interoperability is just compounded by the other delays related to getting to the test results. You know, the interoperability issues is just one more barrier to getting information in a time frame where it's still meaningful and actionable.
Okay. Brett, Carolyn, Christina, Brett, any objections?
None here.
No.
I agree with you guys.
All right. Next topic then. Again, health IT response to COVID-19 pandemic. And this one is about the biosurveillance efforts, including contact tracing, privacy and security issues, what data is classified as HIPAA minimum necessary, it's usable, et cetera, et cetera. I know there's been, since we're collected via mobile devices, there's been a whole lot of stuff written on this. I know that OCR has been putting out some guidance around this, trying to clarify what is in jurisdiction for HIPAA, what is not, what does public health allow you to talk about. I would add on this maybe that we didn't think about before, but I can tell you now in the middle of it, considerations for FERPA as related to this. So I think it's not just HIPAA, but it's also FERPA. And when you're dealing with a public health emergency, what are you allowed to do and not do? To comply with FERPA as well as HIPAA. So there's a Venn diagram kind of overlay here I can imagine in my head where things lay out. So I think this is important. What do you all think?
I agree. I was just scrolling up to the stuff we were looking at before with the COVID response, and I'm wondering if some of this can be consolidated. And we don't have to do it now on this call, but something to think about.
I think that's fair. Michelle, what do you think? Is that doable?
Yeah, actually, because behind the scenes, ONC started working on a crosswalk, and it clearly needed to be consolidated around the pandemic, so there'll be 3 or 4 line items there to start with.
You guys are so good. Thank you, Michelle. I figured you guys are already ahead of us. Excellent.
Well, you have to be.
Yeah, ONC's awesome. You guys rock. All right. So this will be in there, and then it'll just exactly to your point, Christina, it'll just collapse into the other topics there and just highlight the need.
Perfect.
All right. Let's move on in the interest of time here. Great. We're almost to the end of this. All right. Interoperability standards, priorities, task force, prioritization, high tech approved the report, blah, blah, blah. The report established baselines should be set priority standards for FY20, including orders and results, closed loop referrals and care coordination, and medication and pharmacy data. So just about the ONC. This is the findings from the ISP task force, what they're saying we need to focus on for next year, for this year? Is that what they're saying, Michelle?
So there's debate going on for a while about how to handle requirement out of cures to manage a standard priorities requirement. So the ISP task force took care of it the first year or two and published a report in fall that fell into FY20. So we need to report on it in our progress section this year. And then I don't know if Lauren wants to say anything about future years, but we won't need to address it again for another year or so. But we have the option in the report process. Sorry, I'll be clear about that. And then high tech more generally is a different question. Then we can, if we want to, we can go in more depth in the topics in the report, but we don't want to repeat what's in the report. In the progress section, it just could be a link to the report. But if you want to, in the content of a landscape analysis, somewhere talk about the detail, you could also do that.
Got it. What do you guys think? Carolyn, what do you think on this? Should we go into detail here, or should we just reference the findings, the final findings?
I would probably just reference the final finding, because otherwise, then all the other work groups, potentially what should we be highlighting from their work? And some of them have done a lot of work, and some of them have a lot of relevant findings, and I think this is an area where we can streamline reasonably and without getting undue criticism.
Good point. Any objections to that, Brett or Christina?
No, that's what I was thinking. You're opening up a Pandora's box, or the port will never end.
Christina, any issues?
Nope. I don't.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, we're getting storms in D.C., and I missed part of Michelle's overview, so my phone alerted.
Oh, sorry. Be safe. Alerting you. Be safe. Listen.
No, it's good. Listen. It's like,
oh, rejoining. Yeah, be safe. All right. Genomic data. Address privacy issues specific to patient consent for sharing the genomic data. Even if fewer people want to share. Yeah, this one's a mess. It could be combined with the precision medicine topic. Yeah, genomic data and issues around that are just giant thing. I mean, I could go on and on about 23andMe and their privacy practices and others. But I like the recommendations about the merging that with the precision medicine topic. I think genomic data is coming more and more to the forefront, particularly as I've seen so many COVID trials now being done with genomic sequencing and looking for people with more susceptibility. I think it's just you're going to see this more and more and more play out. How do we keep patient information safe, and how do you share it? It's just there's so much around this. So I'm good with the suggestion of combining it, but what do you all think?
I'm fine with
that. Yeah, I'm good with combining it, and I might throw out an additional piece of the quality of the data. You mentioned 23andMe, and I wouldn't want to base my clinical decisions off of that testing. I'm not saying it's 100% bad. It's just when you take those results to independent labs and you get 60-70% accuracy, it's very concerning. And you see more and more folks selling their 23andMe data, or other companies buying 23andMe data so they don't have to go through that data set collection. It's a little concerning. So I don't know if that's the right spot for it or if it's even appropriate, but I know we were talking more about privacy, but I think the quality of the shared data in the genomic realm is relevant.
Great point. Great point, Brad. Especially you as a provider. I mean, I come to you and tell you, hey, I have a predisposition for some sort of cancer, and oh, wait, I don't. I mean, jeepers, you know? It could change your entire course of care.
Yeah, when you think genetics, you think extreme accuracy. Like, you're looking at my blueprint, right? And to know that some of them, and I'm not trying to slam 23andMe, but I think there's some studies out there showing, you know, for what they do, it's nice. But if you want to apply that in other spaces, you have to be careful, at least eyes wide open.
Right. Okay. Any objections to taking this topic and merging it, but yet making sure we also address quality within it? Okay, barring none, I think that suggestion, Michelle, is good. All right, and we're on our last topic here with robotics, which is just I always think of Star Trek every time I say that word. All right, the health IT implications of the use of robotics and diagnosis and treatment, including HIPAA-compliant chatbots, to augment practice capabilities. You know, this was a really interesting thing. So we did a chatbot to do the pre-assessment of COVID-19, and it really was some simple decision support around, you know, have you been around people that have COVID? Have you traveled to certain places? And, you know, all the criteria the CDC lists. And it was really used. It was heavily used on our website. It was amazing, if nothing else, to alleviate some of the anxiety the general public felt. But you could see the power of this, that if you really have some algorithms fueling it, how it could be a really great interface tool, and particularly with the generation that likes to just chat and text. So I see this as a developing opportunity area. I don't know if we should limit it just to chatbots, because I think there's other robotic technology out there in play. Nanotechnology is coming to the forefront. What do you all think?
So when we think robot, when we think chatbots, are we thinking more like the technology, or are we thinking the algorithms, which I would argue maybe is more about the intellectual property and the user experience and all of the issues, ethical, social, and otherwise related to the AI?
I mean, it's
a technology, but what makes it actually function is really the AI and the algorithms underneath it and the learning how to engage with humans in a useful way, or on some sites in a completely unuseful way.
Right.
That's a good point.
Or is it maybe something that we mentioned in terms of an AI topic and put on the list for next year, in that we're not really ready to go here yet?
I'm kind of leaning towards the latter. Not that I'm not interested in this and we're not doing things around it. It just seems it's such an emerging field. I don't know if we know what we know yet. But I mean, it is interesting, but is it more important right now in 2020 than it is something else? I'm not entirely certain of that. Brett or Christina, what do you guys think?
I'm feeling more able to with what you just said. I'm struggling with this one. It seems kind of a little off. Not disagreeing with the importance, but I'm just not. I think tabling it for right now sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's almost two different things. If you've got a really straightforward chat bot that's just going on in a well-established algorithm and there's no machine learning or AI involved in it, that's kind of one thing. Back to what Carolyn was saying, there's certainly got concerns about, you know, ones that are AI machine learning based. Those, that's just kind of a different topic altogether, I think.
Yeah, and I don't want us to lose focus. Like, are the things that we're really laser focused on right now, and like the interoperability, patient access, and privacy and security. And I think if we think of things that are really important that aren't within those buckets, emerge that we should highlight, that we should definitely bring it up. And I'm always all for more than less, but I'm struggling with this topic. It just seems like it's a little bit out in left field.
Okay. So what I'm hearing, let's keep it on the futures issue or the table, the topic, and then we'll come back to it unless something comes up. Maybe a new CPT code or reimbursement code will come up specifically around robotics, so bring this right back to the top. But right now, let's leave it in favor of other topics we should focus our attention on. Okay.
Or someone telling us to change our mind.
or there's always the
great
there's always,
backing on it.
There's always the people above our pay grade to say, hey, this is important to you now. Yes, done. Whatever you say. All right.
Aaron,
any other topics?
Before we move on?
Yes, ma'am.
You saying robotics should be an emerging issue or should be deleted from the list for this year?
Emerging issue, but tabled for next year's report. We'll just have it as a bullet to just track.
Okay. Got you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. All right. I think that does it for this document, right? Carolyn, am I missing anything?
There's actually more pages with proposed content for landscape analysis.
And you all have a choice right now with your remaining time. There's still issues embedded in the slides that were lingering from further up in the document that we brought to the HITECH but didn't really discuss much there yet that you might want to look at further now. Our contracting team helped us look into them a little bit more for you. So you can look at those. And also the list that remains, Kellen's right, there's more to this list. It's a quick look at topics that might be in the landscape analysis but probably don't need a lot more research or discussion. So we at some point want a yes or no to keep them in the landscape analysis. But I think that's less important than going over what's in the slides, personally. But it's your choice which direction you want to go right now.
We can probably push through what's on the last for the stuff for the landscape analysis fairly quickly. Do you all want to look at that in the next meeting in a couple weeks since we've already spent almost an hour debating topics today, or do you want to do all the topics at once and then look to kill another sacred cow next time?
And also next time, in 2 weeks or so, we hope to switch over to the crosswalk, which will obviously be a lot more information to consider. So another third option here is you could look at these offline and come back and say, you know, raise any points that you want to about this last set of line items. We don't use a lot of our meeting time about this.
I like that. Let's take this offline and come back to it. I need to read through this again and look at these. That's all I think.
If Christina and Brett are fine with that, I'm fine with it. But I don't want to push homework on people if they're in a place where they can't really get to it.
That's fine. Whatever you guys want.
So here we go. This circling
so
back
Carolyn,
to
yeah. So Carolyn, we have what, half an hour left on this call? Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. I tremendously apologize. I have a hard stop here in a couple of minutes. Is there any way, Carolyn, you can finish it out for me and I can hop off? We can catch up later.
Sure.
Thank you. I appreciate that, guys. Thank you so much. Go ahead, Ben.
So it looks like we're going to head into looking back at the HITECH member comments we previously discussed. I know there's about three-ish slides worth. Some of these have to do with hot button things and some of them just kind of stuff where we didn't really make a decision before thinking we would see how things played out. So this first one is this improving information exchange for research using health data that is in EHRs. And kind of the backstory there is that there's a lot of information in the EHRs that is hard to get out so that you can use it for research purposes. There's a comprehensive list of challenges here, data quality and consistency, limited governance structures and policies that permit access to the data or restrict it. There's different privacy and security issues that are related to organizations and states. And as we know, HIPAA is often not helpful in the research environment. There's inconsistent implementations across different technical architectures. And you have the varying needs of individuals and organizations that are creating and using data. And then finally, there's the issue of how we clarify consent processes for patients and for the data that they are giving, particularly when it is created for some other purpose. and wants to be repurposed for research. So I think we can kind of think about if we want to keep this in and how we want to frame it or where it fits in. Is it something that we can include in other topics we've discussed today or previously, or is it kind of its own subsection? My perspective is this is an ongoing issue that we'll probably be talking about forever, even when we get some kind of comprehensive rework of HIPAA. There will still be a lot to deal with, but I'm interested in your all's perspective.
Yeah, I would agree, Carolyn. I think it comes up almost every full high-tech meeting, you know, some variant of research data needs. I agree to keep it.
And I think we can combine this with the precision medicine topic and genomic data that we discussed earlier on the call.
Yeah, that might be a place where we can talk about how that kind of data, it really exemplifies the situation and hit some of these challenges without having to go too deeply into them. Do you have any concerns about that approach, Michelle?
I don't have concerns. I'll just point out that the precision medicine will be discussed in the federal activities section as well, because there's the NIH effort, all of us. So it might show up in a couple places in the document. So I'm not sure exactly where we'll combine things, but yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, I would think that would actually be a positive development, because it is such a prominent and recurring topic. In that way, we would clearly not be trying to sandwich it off or give it short shrift, but it would be prominent in the document. Let's move on to the next slide then, if we're finished with that one. So here this topic has to do with the organ transplants use case. And we, you know, the process of harvesting and transplanting organs is time sensitive, and there are a lot of processes and a lot of moving parts in the donation and the actual surgical cycles, things that are done manually by the staff. And the organ procurement organizations have difficulty accessing donor medical records, which, you know, have to be involved in the assessment and evaluation aspects of all of this. So some of the particular challenges are the need for streamlined communication between hospitals and OPOs using these EHRs, and the increased automation, lack of standards for the EHR capabilities related to transplant and data transfer, you know, within the transplant ecosystem and other organizations that are perhaps not typically involved in the healthcare side of things or the research side. And then inconsistent adoption, you know, by transplant hospitals of existing APIs to assist with data exchange. That's particular to organ transplant. So this was mentioned probably 6 or 8 months ago, and wondering where we think it fits today as a use case given everything that has come up with COVID and of course other developments. You know, is this important, but maybe we keep it on the list for next year as an emerging use case later, so that we have time and space to look at COVID-type use cases? Or do we think this one has matured to the point where we should really follow up on it?
Carolyn, this is one I struggle with, because I think, you know, I always think of IT as supporting, and this is one that when we dug into it a little bit, Stephen and I were sort of queried by one of the groups, and there's no standard from the different organ procurement organizations. And so if they could standardize it, then I think Health IT could follow in behind and say these are the requirements. I almost feel like by us talking about, we're maybe putting the cart before the horse, just mm-hmm. thinking about it from a clinical perspective, But I'm sorry, Christina, you started to say something.
No, you're fine. I think we were actually thinking the same thing. This is one I would struggle with taking off as well, because it is just that it seems simple is the wrong word, but like it sounds like it is an interoperability and data exchange issue that we could solve and have a real big impact in this space. And this is a group that actually reached out to USCDI as well and was inquiring about how to get this data class within USCDI. So there's a lot of interest, and I think it's like one of those high impact use cases, so I would hesitate to take it off.
Do we want to perhaps identify it as a use case to be more unpacked in a future report, you know, and kind of identify that it's something to think about, but not something that we're ready to take apart today? I think it's good not to lose it. I wouldn't want to see it go off the list, but it sounds like there's still enough challenges remaining that maybe it's not a good one to try to tackle this year.
I'm just going to say this out loud. I'm wondering if this is another one of those topics that, as we were discussing it, thinking, is this kind of out in left field, or should it be in our bundle of things we're looking at? And we might consider some, a section with emerging data needs or things that have been identified, where we've also identified interests within those communities. Of course, my head goes to like teaming up candidate data elements and data classes for USCDI submission. I don't know if this belongs in the report or not. Just kind of trying to think through how we structure it to not lose some of this information. But I'm okay, Carolyn, if you think we should just table it for now.
I think we don't lose.
Sorry to interrupt. Just before you decide anything, and thought I just had while you were talking, is what if it doesn't stand on its own as equal to other topics, but you keep saying use case. Maybe it fits within another existing topic that's being carried over from last year, like health IT exchange or standards, you know, one of those other ones that we put in the landscape analysis under interoperability, but call out this use case as a key one that's kind of forward-looking and emergent in the sense of urgent, just to call attention and acknowledge it, but not necessarily try to make it stand on its own.
I really like that idea.
I'm fine with that, and I'm fine with revisiting this in September, you know, to think more about where it fits in that way, what it can be attached to. Did you have any thoughts, Brett?
No, I agree with you guys. That makes a lot of sense. I like how Christina outlined it.
Okay. Let's go with that then. And then if we could have the next slide. This is the third one of these topics. This one has to do with ensuring patient access and engagement in data exchange, maybe using the TEFCA. So the background here is that the consumer-mediated exchange is emerging as a viable pathway for sharing data, but patients continue to face barriers in accessing and sharing their health information. Two primary challenges: the need to consider where patient access fits into the evolving TEFCA approach. For example, the Common Agreement in QHIN technical framework could emphasize how the individual access service exchange purpose supports the patient access and engagement, or the QHINs could be established that focus on supporting patients. And then the second challenge is a need to address patients' health disparities that affect exchange of their health information. Since we know all the patients are not on the same playing field. So again, another topic we've not wanted to lose in the past that's clearly within one of the priority target areas for the HITECH, but how do we want to deal with it? Don't all shout at once.
I was just thinking, I mean, this is one that I've supported and brought up multiple times and trying to think where it fits. Caroline, we recently, the RCE reached out to us and we talked about this concept with them recently. And I don't know how that I think it was of an interest, but I don't know where it fits kind of in the work that they're doing now. So I don't know the best place for this. I think it does belong somewhere within TEPCA that we look at what patient access looks like. I'd like it to have its own, like, call out in the report, because I think it's important.
Does it fit as a discussion point within the section on TEFCA and the progress that's been made this year?
Yeah, I think so. And even if it's not, like, doable today, I think it's really important to start thinking about how we have patients have access to information on a broad scale that's not tethered to a individual healthcare organization or provider. My fear is that as we build out this exchange framework, patients are still going to need to go into different places or even different QHINs to find their information. So I want us to start thinking about how we lay a foundation. Whereas as a patient or an organization that may act on behalf of me as a patient is able to plug into the network just like a provider can and be able to share or get information and share information across the whole network. And as I've thought through this more, I'm not sure if that's a QHIN that is on its own, which would be make me really happy, but I don't know if that's the correct approach or if it's having this kind of place within each of the QHINs that is would serve that purpose, where would like maybe a patient facing piece within each QHIN to enable that kind of data exchange for patients across QHINs.
As I recall, one of the discussion points was if you had separate patient QHINs, would that just kind of make it possible for other QHINs to simply not get into the weeds at all on that issue and just kind of expect people to use the other QHIN? Would you wind up sort of helping to add a barrier by not requiring others to get involved? And I don't know that we ever had resolution about that. I think there was just some debate about whether it was better for patients that it be a requirement for all the QHINs or if a separate QHIN focused on patients would serve them better.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think we need a deeper evaluation on this. I think that we would all agree that patients being able to have access like easy access to all of their information is the direction we want to go. But I think there we have like a long way to go. And when I think about it, what I don't want is to keep having the same conversation because we haven't kind of started to think about what this foundation looks like. So if we don't have all the answers, then let's start to think about a framework that incorporates patient access that's not tied to a specific healthcare provider or a specific QHIN, but is more broad.
It sounds like maybe this is something that is best addressed as part of the section on the TEFCA and noted as an emerging issue that needs fuller development at both the work group and the annual report level in fiscal year 21.
Yeah, I think that I agree with that. I think that would be a really good approach.
And we don't lose it, but we don't have to try to make headway on the issue itself ourselves.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds good. So what I'm seeing is we have a slide about next steps, which is kind of the next meetings, and we also have that list with some more items, some more potential topics for the landscape analysis. So we can either end early or we can go back to that list and see if we can knock off a few items. What's your preference?
I might suggest we wait just to have Aaron's input, but I'm fine either way.
I lean a bit towards waiting for Aaron also, but I don't know what your availability is for the August meeting. So if today's a better day, certainly we can start down that path.
I'm fine waiting for Aaron as well.
Okay, let's do that then. Can we have the next slide? I think that's number 10. Yeah, there we go. So kind of our next steps, we will be reviewing the draft crosswalk of the topics with the gaps, opportunities, and recommended activities across the target areas at our next meeting. And then we will have the goal of presenting that for discussion at the HITAC meeting in September. So that would be our first opportunity to get some fairly significant and detailed feedback from the HITAC. And is this meeting on the 6th an hour, or is it 90 minutes? Do you recall, Lauren or Michelle?
It's 90 minutes, I believe.
Okay. So then we would have quite a bit of time to do that and perhaps enough time also to double back and finish the list of landscape analysis items.
Right. And one thing I'll point out that we changed after discussing it with the co-chairs of this group in the schedule, that we're not going to try to push hard towards an outline as soon as October. So we have a couple months on the crosswalk. And we'll schedule the meeting to do that. I do have a question. We can resolve more, in administrative meetings right now. If the group would want to spend a lot of time on an outline or use the crosswalk for that purpose. It's kind of what did happen last year. We spent a little time on the outline, but people kind of preferred the crosswalk tool. Either way, we can get to a draft from either type of tool. We promised a slide. Sorry, I didn't have one. Do the high tech, but if we don't want to do that, we don't have to. I just need to know so I don't keep messaging publicly that we're going to, if we aren't going to. But does that question make sense?
I think so. I would say whatever is the most efficient for you guys.
Yeah, I think we need to agree at some point quickly on a general outline, like that slide we used repeatedly last year. It was a very high-level outline. Getting into a detailed, annotated outline that's been working well between me and our contractor, but it's kind of in the weeds for the amount of time that you all have. But the crosswalk gives you a more holistic visual point of view of what's going in the report, and we can work from there. And then you turn to the draft after that. We can also show you an outline if you want. That's not a problem, but I just need to know so I schedule it properly.
I liked the crosswalk last year, and I thought it made it so that it was easy for the full committee to kind of look at the topic more quickly.
Yeah, I like the crosswalk as well.
I agree.
Okay, good. So we'll check with Aaron too, and it seemed we were leaning that direction, but I didn't want to assume anything. Good. Thank you.
So it looks like we're at public comment time. We're actually pretty much on schedule.
We'll ask the operator to open the line, please.
If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Thank you. And do we have any comments in the queue?
There are no comments at this time.
Okay. I guess I'll hand it back to Carolyn for any closing remarks before we adjourn.
I just appreciate everyone's time and attention today. I think we made some really good progress in terms of wrapping up the topics and getting a sense of what will be in the outline and on the crosswalk, thereby helping Michelle and the team to get that started for us. And I look forward to everyone's participation in a couple weeks here on August 6th. Have a great summer and be safe out there. We want to see you back again.
Thanks, Carolyn. You too.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.